Welcome to Attention Talk Radio, the show centered around paying attention to attention, with your host, Attention Coach Jeff Copper.
Welcome, everyone, to this edition of Attention Talk Radio. I'm your host, Attention Coach Jeff Copper. Today is Wednesday, April the 6th in the year 2010 at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Our topic tonight is a neurologist with ADHD shares his insight in diagnosing and treating ADHD. And with us in our virtual studio is Dr. Jose Foradada. Before we get into things, a few reminders for our iTunes listeners out there and anybody else out there who would like to have our upcoming shows emailed to your inbox. Go to attentionradio.com and sign up for our newsletter, and you'll get a bi-monthly newsletter listing all of the upcoming shows, which is not all of them are all accessible off of our homepage. Also wanted to remind our ADHD coaches that are listening out there that the ADHD coaches conference is going to be held in Chicago at the end of April. I believe it's actually sold out, so hopefully you'll participate. If you're not able to go, I'm not 100% sure, but we might actually be doing a live broadcast on Friday night from the show, so stay tuned to Attention Talk Radio, and we'll let you know more on that. As a reminder, the annual CHAD conference is going to be in Orlando this year in the middle of November. For more information on that, go to chadd.org. And also, CHAD is actually having a teacher-to-teacher training conference in Hopog, Long Island at the Hyatt Regency on May the 15th. For more information on that, go to chadd.org. But moving on, again, today's topic is a neurologist with ADHD shares his insights in diagnosing and treating ADHD, and with us is Dr. Jose Foradada. He's a medical doctor in Tampa, Florida, specializing in the treatment of children with neurologic conditions and diseases. He received his medical degree from Central Eastern University in the Dominican Republic in 1982 and completed his child neurology fellowship in 1990 at the Albert Einstein College of Medicine. He's a diplomat on the American Board of Quality Assurance and Utilization Review Physicians. His professional memberships include the International Child Neurology Association, Child Neurology Society, and other local and national medical societies. Excuse me. He participated in a Child Neurology Society meeting in a retrospective study of specific medication for the treatment of ADHD and neurobehavior disorders, which was submitted for publication to the Journal of American Academy of Children with Adolescent Psychiatry. With that, Dr. Foradada, welcome to the show.
Welcome, Jeff. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm exceptionally thrilled to have you on the program tonight for a couple reasons. I think that A, you've been a neurologist for a period of time, and B, you're a neurologist with ADHD, and I think that you're in a unique position to talk about the topic, not just from a medical background, but actually somebody who's experienced it and has seen neurology evolve over a period of time. So I guess to begin, can you share with us when you were first diagnosed?
Well, I was first diagnosed, as many people do, self-diagnosed when I got into the field that I always wanted to get into. And, I mean, I suspected it already because of certain things that happened during, you know, high school and college and medical school. But, you know, when I started diagnosing this patient, I said, this is me. And, you know, this has been me throughout my life. I remember as a child doing exactly the same things, getting into trouble for the same things and having the same difficulties in school. So, you know, by that time, you know the checklist and the symptoms, and you go through it. And I just about had all of them, and could probably add a couple of them more to the checklist. So there was no question about it. And
so you became interested in being a neurologist actually before you actually thought you had it.
Well, it's interesting because ever since I was a little kid, I wanted to be a doctor. That was my life. That or a jet fighter pilot. So as things work out, I became a doctor, and you know, I was undecided between psychiatry, neurology, neurosurgery, psychiatry, neurology, and all of them basically dealt with the same issue. I guess I was predisposed to get into this field one way or the other. So here I am.
Awesome.
Many years
awesome.
Afterwards. Yep.
There you go. clearly your evidence that great things are possible for people who have those with ADHD, which is we wanted to have you on the show because it's very inspiring. But can you share some of the personal challenges that you had and maybe what you did to kind of overcome those, like particularly going through medical school, running a practice, your own business, et cetera?
Well, going back to, let's say, high school and college, I mean, I was fortunate enough to have enough to get by, but one of the things that my friends always used to tell me was that they hated me because I never did anything in school. I just sat around, kind of daydreamed, and apparently I was able to capture enough to get good grades in high school. And then in college, one of the things that I found out that I had was great difficulty with staying focused while reading. So what I used to do in college, I used to take a tape recorder and take notes and write like a madman and record everything. And what I did afterwards was would go home and rewrite all my notes and then read them. Little did I know that I was kind of correcting one of my disabilities by doing that. What I did was wind up studying for most of the things that I was going to be tested on and not have to kind of pour over and reread books, which I wound up later on having to do in medical school because, you know, I would get distracted and lose track. Mm-hmm. And in the middle of reading something, I would you know, start thinking about something else and then say, you know, get back to the book, get back to the book.
Yep,
you have
yep.
to learn. So you know, some, and this is, I found it very useful because now I tell a lot of the kids that I find that have the same problems, I give them pointers and give them cues and, you know, they come back and say, you know, Dr. Fordat, I tried what you told me to do and it works out great. I'm doing great. School is improving. Grades are better. My grades have gone up and, you know, you see that big smile on their face. So.
Absolutely. It's interesting that you say that because in working with those with ADHD and coaching them, one of the things that I do initially is I do a learning thing to understand how their most dominant way of learning. Many people can be very kinesthetic or very physical where they're moving around, and one of the things that I always listen for are the people that highlight and rewrite their notes. And while not scientific per se, because I'm just looking for what works, many people, when they're having to write, they describe, you know, when I have to write something out, I have to pay attention to it and I have to focus so it draw. If I'm going to finish rewriting my notes, you have to pay attention in order to transcribe. And they say that actually helps them remember. So it's interesting to hear you say that because it's actually a structure that we use a lot for those in coaching with ADHD who naturally do that stuff. So.
Well, that works because what you're doing is you're stimulating various senses at the time, not only auditory but as well visual and sometimes what is called kinesthetic or tactile by
yep.
writing as well. So you're putting input into your brain via three different pathways, which is great.
And, you know, it's funny because as a coach, what I always say, you know, how did you study in college? And, like, where were you and what were you doing? Like, I was reading, I'm like, no. Were you in your dorm? Were you in a library? Were there people around? Was there music going on? Were you pacing? And it's funny because if you listen to them, they'll actually start to tell you, well, I highlighted books and I rewrote your notes, and you can actually mirror back. So I'm hearing that what you're saying is that you rewrote your notes and stuff, and it helped you remember. And by mirroring that back to many people don't really realize that that's what they did at the time. And once they know,
right.
you can say, hey, listen, you might just need to rewrite stuff a couple times in order for you to remember it. So anyway, that's just kind of exciting.
Yes.
What advice do you have for those with ADD who aspire for greatness?
Persevere. Don't give up. I mean, that's the I've seen kids that have significant handicaps, and you keep them going, you encourage them, and you help them out, and you tell them, do not give up, you can do it. Encouragement and perseverance, that's the most important thing. Never give up. And I often tell the parents when they come in and they say, oh, well, he's lazy and he doesn't want to get good grades. And I tell them, no, go back to when you were a kid. Did you ever see yourself saying to yourself, you know what, I'm going to get a bad grade just to upset my parents or just to get back at them or something? No, most of the kids want to get good grades. They want to do well. And the same thing with adults. It's just something that they cannot understand or something that they haven't quite figured out yet that prevents them from getting there. And along the way, then that's what happens. They get frustrated and they often give up. Do not give up.
Persevere.
Yes.
I tell you what, I'd like to go to a commercial break and come back and start talking about you know, at what you've seen transpire in neurology and over the years in practice and yourself. But before we do that, it's okay if I share your office number in case anybody has any questions or wants to contact you?
Absolutely.
I believe it's 813-874-2000. That's 813-874-2000, correct?
That's correct, and tell them that if the line is busy, once again, persevere, okay? Sometimes I will try and get back to them within 24 hours, so leave a number, leave numbers I can reach you out during the day and in the night. Sometimes I'm in the office until 8 o'clock at night. One of my work ethics is I don't like to bring work home, so.
You're going to say that until you get it done.
Exactly.
All right, with that, we'll be right back.
Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
ADHD, is it real? How is it diagnosed? How do I know if I have it or if my children have it? Do you outgrow it? You have questions and we have answers. We're CHAD, a national organization made up of professionals, parents, educators, and of course, those with ADHD. So if you want real answers to your questions, join CHAD at www.chadd.org. Or call us at 800-233-4050.
This is your ADHD information station. Attention Talk Radio.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that gets smaller as time passes. To place an order for a Time Timer, all you have to remember is timetimer.com.
News, updates, and alerts sent right to your inbox. Sign up now at attentionradio.com.
Awareness of how your brain processes information and emotion is the key to self-management and success in today's world. I am an international ADD coach. Contact me, Susan McIntosh, at susanmcintosh.com to see and hear how you too can be a success.
I'm Jeff Copper, host of Attention Talk Radio, here to talk to you about CopyTalk.com, a voice dictation service. This is not just some voice dictation software. It's a real dictation service by people who type whatever you want. When I need to document something, all I do is hit speed dial on my cell or work phone and start speaking. The folks at CopyTalk will type it up and email it back to me that day. The best part is I can dictate as many 4-minute messages as I want, all for one flat monthly fee. Go to copytalk.com/ATR, enter Jeff Copper as the referrer's name, and sign up for the free trial account today. If you tell them I sent you, then you'll get $20 off the monthly subscription for as long as you keep the service.
You're listening to Attention Talk Radio. And now, back to the show.
Welcome back to Attention Talk Radio. Today we have Dr. Jose Fordada, a neurologist with ADHD, talking about diagnosing ADHD. Dr. Fordada, you've been practicing neurology for
20 years now, Jeff.
Yeah.
As much as I hate to admit it, yes.
Can you educate us on how things have changed in the field of ADHD in 20 years?
Well, they have changed quite a bit. They have changed quite a bit, the awareness and definitely the number. I'm sure ADHD has always been there. Is it more prevalent? Is there a greater number of kids with ADHD? Probably so, in the sense that the way society has changed, the situational and environmental factors, the way we live our lives today, absolutely create more of a problem for the child that may have mild ADHD and used to get by. I may have been one of those kids that, you know, had it to a certain degree but was not bad enough that, there was more structure and discipline in the classroom. There were smaller classrooms. There was more individualized attention. And today in the settings, you have kids in classrooms with 35 other kids. Statistics show that about 10 to 15% of the kids will have some variation or presentation of ADHD. So you take 35 kids, 4 kids in that classroom are going to have problems. So,
did you say 15%?
Yes, sir.
15%, that's a big number.
15%, that's a big number. When I first came into training, the numbers were somewhere around 5%.
Uh-huh.
But the numbers have changed quite a bit. And that's because, you know, like everything with autism as well, you've seen the numbers increase. The problem is that also the criteria has loosened somewhat. So we have a whole new spectrum of milder manifestations presenting. So the same thing with a lot of the kids. The problem is that because of the setting they're in, both parents work, the kids come home, and then both parents are tired, so there's no time to really sit down and have quiet time to study and learn materials. Picture this, one or two parents with ADHD, because this is genetic, they're both working, they've had difficult days at work, they come home, they're tired, they're exhausted, mom has to cook or whoever cooks, the other one has to do the bills and whatever, and then the kid has to do the homework. In the meantime, kid now is exhausted, he's burned out, 6, 7 o'clock at night, they have dinner, and then sit down and do homework, good luck.
Yep.
And then, go ahead. Sorry.
Well, there's two things I want to say. Is one, for those that are interested, we did a show back at the beginning of March with Dr. Russ Ramsey up at the University of Pennsylvania that talked about the history of ADHD. And if you want to listen to the show, it kind of talks about how things a lot changed in the 80s and 90s. But what I really wanted to kind of comment on is I did a show with Linda Rogley, who's a ADHD coach in North Carolina that specializes in coaching women. Kind of going through menopause, because she says, is it ADHD, AGE, or menopause? And she kind of specialized in that field. And we were having fun just talking about it and kind of speculating. And we were we're not scientists. We're just coaches. We were just in that show talking about how our perception is, and I want to emphasize it's our perception, that more and more people are being diagnosed with ADHD than before, because I get a lot of people calling me that are getting diagnosed with their children. And again, this is just speculation. Our world is moving to like a self-service society. You got to go on the internet. You've got to do everything. And because of that, many people who had what we call compensatory strategies that could work their way around some stuff, life's getting more complex. And it's getting difficult. They're getting diagnosed. And I'm hearing you say that the numbers are rising from 5 to 15%. So my question to you is the incidence of ADHD going up, or is it just the number of people that are getting diagnosed are?
I believe there's both. There's a component of both. There's more specific, broader diagnostic criteria to include some of those kids that may, or adults for that matter, that may have been missed before, or misdiagnosed with something else. And then I do believe the numbers are increasing. I don't know if it's environmental factors with a genetic predisposition, most likely, but definitely the numbers are increasing.
That's fascinating. I don't want to put you on the spot here. If you're uncomfortable answering this question, please, I want to be respectful, but of the stuff out there as a neurologist, stimulant medications, I mean, there's a lot of buzz around there. Is there any particular ones that you prefer over others, or, again, I don't want to put you in a tough situation, but I've always been curious.
No, I love that question, because let me give you a little story on that, and then having ADHD, sometimes, you're a little bit impulsive. But, after 10 years of doing this or so, I began to notice that certain age group responded better to a different, to a different category of stimulant medications than the other. And I used to begin to, go to conferences and talk to other, people in the field. And some of them kind of looked at me like, what are you talking about? And, others would say, that's absolutely ridiculous. That's not the case.
Yep.
And my philosophy at that time was that younger children, usually under the age of 10 or so, would probably respond better to the methylphenidate, the Ritalin-like products, whereas the older kids and adults tended to respond better to the dextroamphetamine products.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to say that a lot, and I used to get chastised, And then about 10 years ago, a couple of people that are highly respected in the field and admired began to see the same thing and say the same thing. And to me was a redemption when in a big conference, a couple of big people in the field, and I'm not going to name names right now, stated the fact. And, I looked at actually one of my friends who always argued with me back and forth that was not the case, and I just gave him that little grin.
Yep.
And that has been my philosophy. Now, keep in mind, just because you're an adult doesn't mean that necessarily you're going to do well in this particular medication. Sometimes you have to do a trial and error basis and change medications around a couple of times before you find the right combination or the right medication.
That's interesting. I'm just thinking out loud for a second. Correct me, but it kind of makes some sense. I would imagine that the brain going through adolescence kind of matures in that process, and the chemical makeup of the brain kind of adjusts. So it might make some sense that different drugs would work as a result of pre-adolescence and post-adolescence, just based off of the maturity of the brain.
You know, Jeff, that's a very good question that I don't have a specific answer for.
Okay.
I think it would be terrific if we could do the research in terms of what the effects of all the sex hormones, the steroids, and all the other hormones that kind of increase or fluctuate during adolescence and into the early young adulthood years. They definitely have a significant impact on the brain and brain development just as they get older later on, and those levels again and hormones diminish, you begin to see as well a cognitive decline or a cognitive slowness. So it would be wonderful to do the study, and would be something that I would love to do if I had the time. Unfortunately, I run a very busy private practice. I did research before and I loved it, but I'm doing what I'm doing and I can only do so much.
As an aside, I have to pause here. I write a monthly newsletter and I won't go into the details of it. But it's about 6 months ago. I wrote this one. My son's going through puberty. He's intoxicated, and the gist of the article was one time. I'm a parent. I got a 15-year-old, but at the time he was 14, and I was sitting there kind of looking into one time, kind of going on as a parent would do sometime, and I stopped, and for whatever reason, I kind of paused and realized he's going through puberty, and that the chemical makeup of his brain is really kind of changing of all that kind of stuff, and I said, that's no different than somebody who's intoxicated. And I paused and this is just my own rationale in my head. I'm like, I'm talking to a drunk here who's not listening to me, and it changed my behavior with him because I actually quit ranting and raving and realized that, well, he ain't listening to me anyway, and just waited to the next day in my pea brain thinking that he'd like sober up a little bit and I could talk some sense to him, which is interesting because if you listen to any kind of parenting type thing, they talk about how, you're not supposed to lecture them and kind of go on about that stuff. And the whole idea that their brain might be changing from adolescence to something like that, the research and maybe the different way the medications might interact is just fascinating to me.
It is. And go ahead.
Before we go to the next break, I do want to ask you, are there any non-ADHD treatments that don't involve drugs that you recommend or that you find helpful for certain people?
I'm a firm believer that, not only medication plays a role, also, coaching, counseling, teaching the kids appropriate techniques are very important. A lot of these kids also, and young adults and adults for that matter, have other comorbid disorders that go right along with this. And they need to be addressed as
mm-hmm.
well. So absolutely, there is counseling, there is biofeedback, there is actually even there's been a couple of reports in the literature that some of the video games do help improve attention span and motor coordination. A lot of these kids have motor incoordination and poor motor skills as well. So
interesting,
and it's because ADHD is primarily a disorder of the frontal lobes, although it's a whole disorder of the brain, but primarily in there.
Yep.
And that area is the complex motor coordination area, which often is affected. So a lot of these kids, by persevering and persisting in these video games, they focus, they pay attention, they begin by repetition to learn skills, and they master it.
Interesting. That's fascinating. Well, with that, we're going to go to a commercial again, but for our listeners out there, if you've got any questions or you want to get in contact with Dr. Fordata, his office number is 813-874-2000, and with that, we'll be right back.
You're listening to Attention Talk Radio. We'll return in a moment. Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that gets smaller as time passes. To place an order for a Time Timer, all you have to remember is timetimer.com.
Hi, I'm Dr. Ari Tuchman, author of More Attention, Less Deficit, Success Strategies for Adults with ADHD. This is the only book actually written for adults with ADHD. Each chapter is divided into short articles, so you can read only the stuff you want in the order you want. I take lessons from the research and make them totally useful in your daily life. You can get a free PDF of the first chapter at adultadhdbook.com. Check it out.
Okay, let's be honest here. How many times have you forgotten the wet laundry in the washer and it started smelling a little funky? So you had to wash it again? Maybe even twice in the same week? Well, you may be an AD Diva just like me. I'm Linda Rogley, and I founded the AD Diva Network for women with ADD-ish tendencies, especially those of us 40 and better. The AD Diva Network is a great place for support, connection, and a touch of whimsy. You can join us at addiva.net. That's addiva.net.
Do you have something those with ADHD need? Advertise on Attention Talk Radio. We are a narrowcast, internet-based radio show targeting those with or impacted by ADHD. To learn more about advertising opportunities, email attention at attentiontalkradio.com.
And now, back to Attention Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everyone, to Attention Talk Radio. With us in our virtual studio is Dr. Jose Fardada talking about diagnosing and treating ADHD. Dr. Fardada, with the time that we have left, I want to just kind of like shift gears. I've been kind of curious. What are the advantages of seeing a neurologist over a psychiatrist in the diagnosis and treatment of ADHD?
Well, we're both dealing in the same field. Psychiatrist deals more with the affective behavioral spectrum of the disorder. But I honestly can't say, Jeff, that there's a major difference. It's a matter of preference to some of the parents or people. You know, there's always been the stigma that if you go to the psychiatrist, you're crazy, and which is totally, absolutely outrageous because it's not the case. But, you know, it's hard to get people to overcome that perception that, oh, my God, I have to go to the psychiatrist, or I have to take my child to the psychiatrist. You know, it can't be. So,
yep.
I mean, psychiatrists and neurologists, we deal with the same thing. So I can't say that there's an advantage. I mean, from my standpoint, I have modified and curtailed my practice. I do 70% of my practice is based on this. So it's my own personal interest and my own personal experience that drives me to work with these families, work with the patients, and give them comprehensive care, much more so than probably a lot of the neurologists that are not interested in this field. They're much more interested in other stuff. So I can only say for myself that, you know, that's what I do. So, but I would say that there really is no major difference between one and the other than the perception of going
Got
to
it.
The psychiatrist.
Got it. Need to pause here for a second. Dr. Fardada, I think this is a spectacular show. We've got a bunch of people online. We've got a bunch of people in the chat room. And I'm going to tell everybody out there, we've got about a minute left of the show, and I made some adjustments while we're talking. For some of you out there that are streaming the show, it's going to end in a minute. We're going to continue. We're going to have the ability to continue talking here for a second. If you get cut off, you can go to attentiontalkradio.com in about 15 minutes, play the show, and just skip to the end, and you'll be able to catch the rest of this conversation. But I think we got some good stuff kind of going. So if at some point in time it ends, just know, go to attentiontalkradio.com. Look for the show. It's going to be at the top. Click on it and just, you know, move the dial, if you will, you know, 30 minutes into it, and you'll catch the end of it. So going back to things... And Dr. Fardada, one of the questions I had, and I don't want to put you on the spot here, and if you're uncomfortable, let me know, but ADHD, since I've been doing the show and talking to some experts, it seems to me that it has really, our knowledge of it has really accelerated in the last 10 to 15 years, and really very much so in the last few, and I can't help but think that many of the people that are out there have educations back in the 70s and 80s. And finding the right person, particularly for an adult, for diagnosis can be kind of challenging. Can you comment to that?
Well, the adults have paid the grunt of the price because they have gone for the greatest part of their life undiagnosed. and untreated. Whereas, yes, of course, you know, there's a great demand for ADHD, of course, that makes it profitable for the pharmaceutical companies, which create products to treat this and therefore invest more money in research.
Uh-huh.
So all of that has been created and stimulated. ADHD was diagnosed back in 1938, sarcastically by a doctor named Dr. Still.
Yep.
Which I can picture this guy sitting on the desk with his suit and tie and, you know, and the kid running around the office and him looking at the mother and said, "Madam, your child is way too active." And I can just picture it. When I first read that, I just kind of went off and so, but, you know, of course, the adults have paid the grunt, because in my age, okay, the saying was, all he needs is some discipline, a good spanking, or you know, something like that. And, you know, even though we really started looking at that, treating kids in 1954, that's when Ritalin first came out and started being used for the treatment of ADHD. Prior to that, dextroamphetamine was around, but was used for different purposes. So the first drug that was used for the treatment of ADHD per se was methylphenidate or Ritalin.
Mm-hmm.
And then they found out more different drugs. Now we have a whole multitude of stimulant versus non-stimulant medications, and there's a lot of off-label medications as well that are used for ADHD as well.
Excellent.
Next question. This is a little loaded question. So, and I want you to be honest with this, okay? As I've been doing the show and I've been kind of talking to some experts, I've listened and I've heard, and I'm hearing more and more about the brain can actually physically change over a period of time. And as a coach, I call myself an attention coach because I can't change anybody. All I can do is change how you pay attention to some stuff. And I like this analogy when I work with ADDers. It's almost like you were born left-handed, but you live in a right-handed world. And if you're paying attention to right-handed solutions, it's just going to be hard. But if you pay attention to how you actually work, I'm left-handed, the solution's obvious. Use a left-handed pair of golf clubs to go play golf. And that shift of paying attention, I've had some people on the show that have actually said that science is starting to reveal that the brain physically changes when you pay attention to things differently. Am I out to lunch on that, or what are your thoughts on that? Can you verify?
There is a lot of evidence emerging. And now that we have much more specific diagnostic tools, for example, you know, they did a study in London on cab drivers, and certain parts of their brains were much more developed, their volume and functionality in that part of the brain that has to do with abstract perceptual, three-dimensional abstract processing was much more developed than compared to people that did not do that. And there are other people that do a lot of specific task-oriented skills that certain areas of the brain have developed. So obviously the brain, it's a wonderful organ, because the more we study it, the more we find out about stuff. You know, probably 15 years ago, we used to say, well, there's no potential for regeneration of the brain, and there's, you know, once you have brain damage, you're done. And, you know, now we are beginning to have significant ample evidence that that's not the case. Therefore, so many of those patients that were kind of written off after significant brain damage have come back and have come back with significant, improvement in their level of function. So, and I think that, you know, as research goes on and time goes on and we discover more ways to even enhance that potential of the brain, which is called plasticity, things are going to improve, absolutely.
This is just fascinating. So I kind of, my brother got his doctorate in physics. And years ago, he told me there's more scientists alive today than all throughout history combined. I'm like, what? He said, think about it. You know, 100 years ago, you had to have a lot of money to be a scientist. You had to be really smart. You had to have a lot of free time. And I was like, wow, that really kind of made a lot of sense. I mean, I don't know if that's actually correct or not, but I do feel like we got a lot of scientists working on this, and it's all weirdly kind of coming together at this point in time.
Well,
and we're about ready for kind of like a breakthrough in this area.
Well, I think what's happening is the amount of information technology that we have available at our hands now through the web. You know, of course, you know the number of population has doubled in the last 100 years. So therefore, the number of anything, you know, should have more or less doubled. So we should have. But what I think what happens is there's a lot more research and communication available to people. And you know, once you find something, and Dr. Smith and in Boston is doing research on this, and you read their research, that may lead to another idea, and then you know, so things kind of speed up. I
yep.
believe that we're definitely going in a geometric fashion in terms of not just in terms of the brain and neuroscience, but in all the medical fields as well. There was an interesting article, I think, in Newsweek a couple of weeks or more than about a month ago, that the year 2045 is when we become immortal. And, you know, they show a picture of a guy with a plug in the back of the head. And you know, I don't know if that's going to happen in 2045, but eventually we are going to be able to, you know, work in memory and produce chips that will improve your brain function.
Wow, that's fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. Well, with that, Dr. Porter, I'd like to thank you for coming on the show. This has been spectacular. I've learned a lot. I shocked 15% possibly of people that have ADHD, the difference in neurology and psychology and stuff. So thank you very much for coming on the
You're
show.
You're welcome.
We'll certainly appreciate it. And everyone out there, a few things coming up next week. We're going to have the ATO people coming up at the conference. And then after that, we're going to have Rick Green from Totally AD, which will be exciting. So thanks a lot, Dr. Ford, and we'll catch you next week.
Thank you, Jeff. Have a good one.
Bye-bye.
Bye.